Owners of a direct care practice are more likely to experience higher job satisfaction than the insurance-based practice, and it's no wonder why. Direct care is independent of insurance. Patients pay the doctor directly for their expertise. The doctor gets full autonomy in how they care for patients and how they get paid. We've chosen this path for the love of medicine. This is the direct care way. By listening to this podcast, you may even start to believe that you too can have a successful direct care practice. Come listen with an open mind as I share my personal journey on how I pivoted from an insurance-based practice to direct care right in the middle of the pandemic and the valuable lessons along the way. This podcast may be the very thing you need to revitalize your medical practice. I'm your host, owner of a direct care podiatry practice, Dr. T. Nguyen. Have you ever crushed so hard on somebody that you've never met in person, but like maybe it's in a movie, TV, it's a celebrity, maybe it's a scientist, public figure, somebody like that feels so far out of reach? Have you ever had that person in your mind and you're like, I would love to meet them? Well, I got that experience. It was a celebrity chef that I saw a documentary on Netflix called Chef's Table. And if you're a foodie, I think you know what I mean. But the chef from Brazil, Alex Atala, was on my top three chefs that I wanted to meet and dine at their restaurant. The problem was I would have to travel to Brazil to go to his restaurant. And I didn't know when that was ever going to happen, if it was going to happen. But this past weekend, my husband surprised me with a dinner reservation down the street in Los Gatos. And it happened to be a pop-up restaurant. So he, the chef, brought all his stuff over here to California to deliver his Brazilian treat to us. So I didn't have to travel that far to meet him in person. He served me cheese, guys. This was like the most amazing experience that I've had in a long time. It was fine dining, a total immersive experience. The first thing I ate was a giant ant that tasted like lemongrass. It's not something I would like voluntarily want to grab and put in my mouth, but that was all the rage at this restaurant. And I'm still grinning from ear to ear. I just can't believe that something that I just envisioned that I wanted became a thing. I got to meet the chef in real life. I took a picture. I said hello. I gazed endearingly into his eyes, and it was the most lovely thing I had happen in most recent times. So from that experience, I actually wanted to share with you the three things that I learned from my favorite chefs. So my top chefs, I've met two of the three, and hopefully I get to meet the third one in person someday, and I'll share with you when that actually happens. But I met the first two. Now it's Chef Alex Atala, Chef Anthony Bourdain, and then number three, to be determined. I'll let you know when that happens. But anyway, here are the things that I learned from them that I think is going to be relevant to how we apply it in our business or any venture that we put our minds to. The first one, and I think really what draws me to certain types of people, is that these are people who take risk, which means if you're somebody who takes risk, you're going to fail a lot. And we just know that that's normal, that we're just going to keep trying and keep going. So my favorite people in the whole wide world are people who make me feel a little bit scary, maybe a little bit ambitious at the same time too. Like, they're doing something that I could not ever envision or imagine doing, but they're taking risk, which then makes me feel like I should probably be taking some risk too to get to the level where I want to be at. So in your business, what we do is pretty risky. Not taking insurance, opening up a private medical practice, bringing things into our practice that maybe we never learned in our training. Those are a risk because not everybody is doing it. But you should do it anyway, because you'll never know what it'll take you unless you try it. Which also means you should expect some level of failure. So let's say you do something like create a package. You're like, I don't know if this is going to work. You do it anyway and nobody buys it. Okay, so what did you learn from that? It wasn't a complete failure. It was just something that didn't work for that time. Maybe the messaging was off. Maybe the demographics wasn't there for you. Maybe it was a price point. We don't know, but you got to test those things in order to know if it's going to work or not. But if you sit back,
passively learning about business and just waiting for it all to come to you, then you may never have the opportunity to learn the lessons you need to learn about what's going to work and what's not going to work. And my business in California may be totally different from where you are, whatever state you're in, whatever city you're in, and maybe even the demographics are completely different. So what I have to share works for me, but it may or may not work for you. That essentially means to keep going, to keep trying and take those risks, learn from those failures, carry on. A second thing I learned from my favorite chefs, why I love them so much and why they're where they are in their career. They are people who express their whole self, even if it's messy. They're truly authentic to their brand, to who they are, how they show up. And sometimes they make the news in like a bad way, but that's just who they are. And can we really blame them? Because I don't think any of us are perfect, right? They're choosing to express their whole self, even when they know it's messy. They're embracing it, and they attract the people who appreciate that, who love them for that. Like me, I love messy people. So even if you're thinking about something, a vision that doesn't really make sense to anybody else, have the freedom to express your whole self regardless. I think that is the most magical thing that you can do for yourself. There's a saying that goes, be yourself because somebody else is already taken. And that's exactly what that means. Whoever you are, however you are, express it fully so that you are in alignment with the work that you do, with the people you attract, and the life you want to live in this lifetime. Because after all, we just have this one life. And then when it's done and over, that's it. And then number three, never give up. Never giving up is a skill. I think too many of us are perfectionists, and we give up too soon. We get that one bad review and we're like, I hate clinic. I'm done with being a private practice owner. Or maybe you've gotten 5 bad reviews and you feel that way, you know, whatever that number looks like. And we feel defeated. We make it mean something when it's probably not more than somebody who just likes to express the criticism. They're just somebody who complains a lot, you know, and we shouldn't take that to heart every single time. But in all businesses, not just my favorite chefs, of course, but those who never give up are the ones who prevail. So if you want your business to succeed, take risk, expect a couple of failures, keep going, continue to express yourself so that you are in alignment with the work that you do and you attract the people who you're meant to attract. And then lastly, just keep going. Don't give up. So now let's get into the questions you've been asking. First question that came up, do you still need a DME license if your business is a pure cash pay? I'm trying to figure out what this question is about. I don't have a DME license anymore. That's a durable medical equipment license, which means you buy something wholesale, you kind of sell it to the patient, but by selling, you actually bill the insurance company and then the insurance company pays you some dollar amount. This is usually a profitable way for Medicare. So if you're dispensing, let's say, a diabetic shoe to a Medicare beneficiary, you need a DME license to, number one, dispense it, and then number two, to be able to bill it for the profit. I did that for a little while. It was just way too much paperwork, way too much to keep track of. There was also like this condition where I had to go through the primary care doctor to get their chart notes. It was really painful. So I stopped doing that, saved so much time. Didn't care about the money lost. It wasn't really lost. I gained a lot of peace back instead. So I don't have a DME license anymore. If I sell something, I sell it at equal price to Amazon if I think it's equivalent. And if it's not, I explain to patients why my stuff is better so they don't feel cheated. Everyone's going to look on Amazon to find an equivalent. That's just how life is these days. So as a cash practice, I just charge things that I buy wholesale at the retail price, and then I charge for my service, and that's it. If you want to have a DME license so that you can charge the insurance, let's say you're a hybrid situation, you want to send your bill to insurance, Medicare, and dispense those products, you can. You just have to like deal with the paperwork. What I do alternatively, if I know it's a thing that insurance pays for, like diabetic shoes, I'll just send it off to a local specialty pharmacy. I'll write the prescription to them and let them handle the paperwork. in my community, a lot of the specialty pharmacies have stopped billing out to Medicare for a period of time. I don't know if this is indefinite or not, but one of the business owners was telling me a lot of companies were stopping their Medicare billing because audits, it was expensive, it was time consuming, you know, all the stuff. So you might be limited in your community as to who is dispensing, but they're out there. One thing to keep in mind, there are online vendors who say that they can bill on your behalf. And I would just say, just do your due diligence about what that actually looks like. Sometimes it might be that they have a physician on staff and they're billing it that way. And I don't really know the fine details of what that looks like, but I do know people were offering it to me. And I was like, that just sounds like more mitts in the pot. I really don't want to get involved in anything that could potentially be messy. So that's an option. It's coming. A lot of people are very interested in the profits that insurance have to offer. Just be careful that you don't get tethered into something that might be deemed illegal. So that's that. Next question. Do direct pay PCP feel like supporting a direct pay podiatrist? I don't know where this question really comes from. I can say that the DPC, direct primary care doctors who refer to me, they're awesome. They're very supportive, and I send patients to them who need a primary care doctor. They're so busy that they either have a wait list or they're just not available for new patients. So DPC is expanding tremendously. So for me, they've been supportive. I have heard of primary cares wanting to learn more techniques, and I've taught other primary care doctors certain things within podiatry so that they can take care of their patients and bring more value to their patients in their DPC practices. I have no issues with that. So I do know that they're learning more skills to provide more value to their patients, and I think that's great. Plus, that allows me to do more of the specialty work like surgeries and procedures, so that's cool. There's an abundance of opportunities, so if you're hearing things like a certain practice doesn't support what you do, then all you gotta do is just move down the list of your top 100 referral sources. So you're gonna go through this discovery phase to see who will support you and who doesn't. And don't make that be a thing to stop you from doing the work that you need to do, which is meeting all the doctors and letting them know how you can help them. Don't forget, these doctors, they'll retire or change jobs, or they might even forget all the things that you do. So just staying top of mind with them is really important. And so being persistent is how you win the game. Next question, what is your average collection per patient encounter on a cash pay model? For this question, I think this can go two ways. If you're asking about my pricing, it's online at drtpodiatry.com. It's constantly changing. So if you checked it a year ago, it's totally different now. But my current prices are there, and I try to be really clear about new patient visit, follow-up visits, procedures, and surgeries. You can check that out if that's the question. But if your question is, on average, what can I expect to get per patient that walks in my door? I calculated last year to be about $243. And mind you, I actually work part-time now. I only work a couple days a week. So everyone's numbers are going to look different. Speaking to other practices, theirs varies between $200 to $500 per patient for non-surgical practices. And so if you do surgeries, that number can definitely go up. I like to say that my work is seasonal. So I gave you my 2023 numbers. 2021 is different. 2024, moving forward, is going to be different. Because each season or each quarter or each month, I'm focusing on something different. I'm doing a variety of things. I'm testing out the waters with different offers, different services. And so my numbers will fluctuate from month to month and from season to season. So what I would recommend for you, if you're not a numbers person, to at least compare your quarterly one to last year's quarterly one. You're not looking at quarter one to quarter four necessarily. So I want you to just keep that in mind. Those numbers are going to look kind of wonky in the beginning because you don't have a steady state yet. But with time, you'll start to understand your numbers better, and then you'll start to see the trend that maybe summer is a busier month for you versus winter, or vice versa. And then you'll see the pace of your practice. And it also will align with like your vacation time. So if you're taking time off and you don't have a membership type of practice, it's going to look different from if you do have a membership practice, because with a membership practice, you're providing consistent revenue. So something to think about when it comes to your number. Essentially, what I want to share with you is there are some numbers that you need to know that you don't need to have like bookkeeping and accounting experience to know. I know for a lot of us, looking at our numbers can be terrifying, especially as money is leaving our bank account. But there is a couple of things that you do need to know. Five things I'm going to share with you. The first number you need to know is how much money is coming in per month and per year. The second number is what are you spending, your overhead expenses, and that will include your salary. The difference between one and two, the revenue minus what you're spending, your overhead, is the difference. The difference will either be a positive number, which is a profit, or a negative number, which will be the loss. Don't freak out when you see your first loss. This is just the wave of practice. You're just learning about what things are going to cost you. Maybe you had some surprise expenses like taxes, for instance. Don't worry about it. Look at it as best as you can from an objective point of view so that you can get clear about where you need to go. Having an excellent accountant will help you reduce your tax and depreciation of equipment, credits, stuff like that. I don't do that. That's not my language. I send it off to somebody. I pay them for that expertise. And that's not something I really dig into. You can if you like. I don't. And then the other number, where are we? So know your revenue, your overhead, whether you're making a profit or you're making a loss. And then the number that I like to go with per patient value for the year. You take your first number, your revenue, divided by the number of appointments you had that year. So if I did that for 2023, take the revenue divided by the number of appointments. That means on average, each person, whether it's new or recurring, generates $243, something like that, for me last year. So those are the numbers that I really advise you to know, especially if you're somebody who's like, I don't like numbers. Start there. Your revenue, your cost, the difference, and then what per patient is bringing into your practice. The last question I'll answer here, somebody asked, do you have any marketing tips? This is the entire podcast. This is me telling you everything that you should be doing. And even if you just did some of the things, you're still going to see movement in your practice. I throw what I call pasta to the wall to see what sticks. I think the best marketing tip is the one that is the hardest for us. It's building strong relationships with your community. So that referral 100 list that you need to create, that is a big number because you have to keep it growing. Make a list of every possible person or groups of people who may have the people you can help. So for example, me as a podiatrist, the people who would need my services are primary care doctors, rheumatologists, vascular doctors, nutritionists, diabetic educators, nail salons. You see, all of these people intersect with my people. So I start creating this list, and I advise you to continue to make this list and just start meeting those people in your community. So those are generally individuals. Other ways to find people is if you give a lecture where you can talk to more than one person at a time. That's an excellent way to start building your list. Or if you are a digital creator, you can create webinars online and speak to them without leaving your house. How cool is that? So this is something that you'll constantly build on. And I have a worksheet on Google Drive where I share with my staff members where we continue to add to the list. We pay attention to who the new doctors are, who's referring to us. We ask them who our good connectors are, reach out to them. I ask my patients who their doctors are. I get the whole list of who they're seeing, and then I send out my notes to all of them and tell them that I'm available for new patients, that kind of stuff. So the best marketing tip really is to keep going. This is a never-ending activity. And it could be as simple as you just writing a personal card saying, I'm a small business owner. I can see patients same day. Would love to connect. And you mail off that postcard, or you have your staff members drop off, or you yourself drop off cards and say hello in person. Spaghetti to the wall. See what sticks. Do it all. See what generates that return on investment. It's actually really fun in the beginning because you'll see that when you yourself meet people in person, they're really excited to meet you. Even if it's just for a minute where you say, hey, I'm Dr. So-and-so, just want to let you know that I'm available to see patients. Here's my card. Do you want to grab lunch sometime? Or do you want to grab coffee? That kind of stuff. And that's all that it takes to start a conversation, to start a connection. If you find that you need more support in your direct care practice, or you need more direction, or you need more accountability, I want to invite you to join my program. This is where you're going to know exactly what you need to do in 12 weeks or less. You're going to continue to have ongoing support. I have a private WhatsApp chat. If you want to participate in that and just know that you're amongst people who will support you in your wildest direct care dream. So the link will be down in the show notes. I really look forward to helping you get to where you want to be. And if this isn't for you at this time, at least share this episode with somebody. I would truly appreciate that. Thanks so much for listening today, and I will check back with you next week. Take care.
Thank you so much for being here with me. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please like, share, and subscribe so more people like you can have access to another way of practicing medicine, the direct care way. Let's connect, find my info in the show notes, and send me your questions. It might be the topic for future episodes. And lastly, if you remember nothing else, remember this: be the energy you want to attract. See you next time.